Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Carrie Peck, the elder law attorney, Illinois' greatest asset. I call you that sometimes. I go, isn't it great to know that we live in a state where Carrie Peck lives and works? He's in our studio today. Hello, Mr. Peck.
Hello, John. Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
You're the elder law attorney who has written a book about elder care, guided the state legislature to write laws that protect their assets. Ooh, this sounds just like a commercial, which this is not. And also the Supreme Court has you on some fancy commission, right?
Supreme Court, in a historic decision, created for the first time, John, the Illinois Supreme Court Commission on Elder Law. And I'm honored and privileged when the Supreme Court appointed me to chair this statewide commission. And we have members throughout the state. And I also was able to ask the Supreme Court to appoint doctors to our commission, since so many of the problems facing the elderly relate to cognitive impairment. For example, many older folks get financially exploited, either on the internet or on the telephone, perhaps a door-to-door roofer, things of that nature. So cognitive impairment in older adults often lead to financial exploitation.
Those grandpa schemes and grandma schemes are just amazing, where the young person calls and says, hey, grandma, it's me. Something terrible happened. I'm in Iowa and I'm in jail, or my car broke down. I need you to wire me or give me your credit card number. And please don't tell mom and dad because they'll be really mad. And the grandma or grandpa says, oh, okay. And then they, you know this bit, right? And they send money to the scammers, and there goes the credit card. And I don't know that there's much anybody can do about that, Carrie.
There's very little anybody can do. The reality here is that older adults, when they get telephone calls, the grandparent scam, which usually comes in the middle of the night, and the scammers have done their research. They know your grandchildren's names. They imitate the voices. And, of course, you've just woken up. A lot of scams come from, you know, telephone calls. The IRS will not call you and threaten to arrest you, so don't send money. Social Security will not call and ask for a refund to send out.
But isn't the best way to prevent this? I don't know. Does this work? If I am the, not the medical, but the financial person in charge of mom or dad's assets, what am I talking about? Custodian?
The power of attorney?
Power of attorney.
Right.
Well, I wonder if, would that offer some protection from that? Maybe not, huh?
No, probably wouldn't, because the scammer's going directly to the older adult.
And they would still be able to give them a credit card number or wire money or something like that.
Right, unless the power of attorney agent has taken complete control of mom or dad or grandpa's grandma's money, they're going to be able to do it.
And in that case, now I've got the credit cards and the bank routing numbers. They don't have them. They don't know them. They can't give them out.
That's the way to do it. That's the way to do it.
But then you've got to get mom or dad to sign on to agree to that. And that's probably the most difficult conversation you'll ever have.
That and taking away their car when they're no longer able to drive.
Yeah, my mom wants to drive still, and I don't know that she's going to drive. And she talks about it a lot, and we humor her. And maybe she will get stronger and more able, but it doesn't look like it's in the realm of possibility right now.
Regrettably, you know, when older adults lose their driving privileges, they know they're at the bottom of the ninth inning. They've lost their independence, and it's just a question of time.
Let's say the top of the ninth, maybe middle of the eighth.
Okay.
So one of the reasons I asked you to join us today, though, was because I know two scenarios. One is a husband whose wife needs care, and they're middle-aged. They're 40s. And then another situation where a woman maybe in her 50s has been caring for her mother in her 80s. But in each case, they want to be the caretaker for the spouse or the parent. And rather than hire somebody else to do it, how about if the state pays me to do it? That would be more economical. It would be more familiar. It just makes so much sense, doesn't it?
It does make sense.
And is there a program like that where the family member gets paid? Because sometimes they have to quit their job or work part-time now because they're doing this care.
It does make sense. And in Illinois, the Illinois Department of Aging runs what's called a community care program. And I want to thank them for the fine job that they are doing. But the community care program requires that in a situation that you've described, whether it's the husband or the daughter for mom, the person that's going to receive the care, so the wife and mom, need to qualify for Medicaid in order to receive these services. And under the community care program, they need to spend down basically their assets to $17,500. They are entitled to keep their car and their house, but all sum total of their checking account, their savings account, any money they own, stocks they might own, have to be less than $17,500. So you need to qualify for Medicaid. If someone wants to do that, they then need to reach out to what's called a care coordination unit. You can locate those on the Illinois Department of Aging website. It's all geographical, so Cook County has multiple care coordination units that ultimately are going to get involved in this. And they need to come out, the state of Illinois needs to come out to the home of this individual and conduct what's called a determination of need exam. What that means is they're going to find out if, let's use the wife, for example, if the wife can dress herself, can she feed herself, can she cook food, can she go to the bathroom on her own, and if someone were to assist her as an in-home companion aide, what ability would she have to do with that? So they're also going to give a mini mental status exam, and then they're going to take this score, determination of need. The acronym, like everything else in life, is a DON, a DON screening. That's what they call it. And they're going to take that DON screening and determine whether or not the wife qualifies and for how many hours she qualifies for care.
How much will they pay the person to do that?
It's absolutely zero, okay? The state of Illinois will do that gratis, but they're going to fundamentally walk in and say, are you sure your assets are only $17,500?
Yeah, but if I qualify for this program, then I'm going to care for that person, and the state's going to pay me for their care, right?
What you're going to have to do is, if you're going to qualify, if your patient is going to qualify, yeah, you want to be the caregiver. You're going to then get hired by an in-home health agency.
Oh.
Okay? That's going to train you, that's going to run a background check on you, and then is going to pay you hourly under the terms that the state says. For example, you're entitled to provide 20 hours of care for the wife, and this is what you're going to get paid.
So now I'm working for this agency, but my client is my mom or my wife or son or whatever. And in that case, what are they paying? $20 an hour?
Approximately.
Like $20.
Approximately.
That $17,000 threshold is ridiculous.
Agreed.
Okay, we'll pause here. It's 312-981-7200. That's not as all-encompassing or generous as I thought it would be. I think this is a good idea, and I don't think it's as expansive as it needs to be. Maybe that's because they want to protect us from fraud, and so it seems to be a little stringent and minimalist, but come on already. I'll pause here. 312-981-7200. Maybe you've just got one of those questions about somebody's saying something to mom or dad about their will or estate. Carrie Peck's the elder law expert. Carrie, this person says, if my dad passes away and leaves approximately $8,000 in credit card debt behind, can the credit card company put a lien against the house? I presume it would be the father's house. What's your answer to that?
My answer is that you should consider opening a probate estate. All creditors need to file their claims in a probate estate, and they can't lien the house until they get a judgment. They need to file within 6 months of the appointment of perhaps your caller as administrator of dad's estate. So there are steps along the way to protect you from this kind of problem.
But if... seems to me like if you owe $8,000 on your credit cards, mom or dad passes away, their house is worth $8,000. Say there's $100,000 of equity in the house. The credit card company would have a right to claim $8,000 of that home, would they not?
Ultimately, I agree they would. But you don't want to have them foreclose on that house and take that house for $8,000.
Well, that's what I'm thinking. But then how do they get the cash out of that house? And presumably you'll sell it. But if you don't, then Then it gets more complicated, I guess, huh?
Well, it gets more complicated because if they get a judgment against the house, so to speak, or dad and his estate, they can foreclose on the house and you lose your house for $8,000.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
So what's the solution to that?
Well, I think the solution is that force them into a probate court and force them to file a claim in court. If they file a claim in court, number one, you might be able to compromise that $8,000, and you could prevent them in that scenario, I believe, from foreclosing on the house.
Terry Savage, it was my friend Ray Kaplan who does, she's an attorney that works with people on their student loans, and she was talking about how often these credit companies will negotiate a lower amount is that your experience as well?
My experience is ask to pay less than the full amount. Most credit card companies will accept it.
Where have I been? Of course, I've had the ability to pay, and I don't have a lot of credit card debt, but I thought those people, hey, it's in the contract. And why should they take less? I gave you money, you got to give me money back. Now, both of you are making them sound smarter or kinder than I thought they would be.
I don't think it's compassion. I think it's hard business, and I think they're willing to take the money they can get versus chasing money that they can't collect.
Well, there is a program in Illinois now where, in fact, medical debt is being purchased for pennies on the dollar, and the state's actually buying that up and freeing people of billions of dollars or millions of dollars of obligations. So I guess it does work that way. My friend also said, though, that there's the power of attorney for your finances and then the one for the medical. You've walked us through this before. Which is which? What does that mean?
So in Illinois, we have two flavors, powers of attorney, durable power of attorney for health care and a durable power of attorney for property. The concept is that I, as principal, not of a school, I'm creating a principal agency relationship. I name you, John, to manage my health care. You're my agent. When I'm no longer competent to make my own decisions, you make those decisions for me. Same exact principle in the management of my assets. I name you to manage my assets when I'm not able to manage them myself. And so you become my agent. You stand in my shoes.
Is it your recommendation that the same person be both of those things?
It depends on your family dynamic. I think that some people know that, maybe the daughter is more capable with money and she should manage the money. And maybe the son's a doctor. As long as he's not your treating doctor, he could be involved in making medical decisions for you. So you can, if you wish, name the same person, but you don't have to.
John, please ask Carrie Peck if the caregiver information can be provided to other family members. My brother has power of attorney over my mother. He has positioned himself in her home. Looks like he lives there, but he does not. We want to know if he's getting paid as her caregiver because he does not provide her care, just makes it look like he does. Not sure what all's going on here. Do you have much to say about that scenario?
Well, it sounds like the family's clearly at odds, and the person that has the power of attorney doesn't want to disclose what's going on. In Illinois, under the Probate Act, you have the right to go into a probate court and assert that the agent, the brother here, is not acting appropriately under the power of attorney.
So, yeah, I'll bet that happens a lot, right? One of the siblings is living with mom or dad. You don't know if they're spending down their checking account. They're controlling things, and you don't know what's going on. I can force them to reveal the checking account and stuff like that?
Yes, the agent can be forced in a courtroom also to account for mom's money.
Does this happen a lot?
Happens a tremendous amount of times.
What's the most common scenario you deal with your clients in the elder law sphere?
Well, I think most commonly today, it's the children of the first marriage fighting with the second spouse over getting cut out of the estate plan by dad on his deathbed. And that's a frequent scenario. So we typically have the children completely cut out. Dad leaves all of his assets to his second spouse or his girlfriend on his deathbed, and the children from the first marriage seek to overturn those documents.
How does that usually go?
It usually goes pretty well for the kids if they represented in our office.
But the dad should have the right. They're his assets. He could cut the kids out. Maybe they're lousy kids.
If dad is mentally competent, he certainly has the right to cut out those children.
So this deathbed scenario you're describing is maybe not dead willfully or consciously doing it, but the girlfriend or the second spouse manipulating him.
Well, and manipulating him, maybe he's already into moderate Alzheimer's disease. And he's taking medication, and he's being treated for his dementia, and has no idea what he's signing. So those are what I call the kind of deathbed scenarios.
But does the law state, like the pecking order, like, okay, dad dies, who's next in line for his assets, his second wife or his first child?
If he dies without a will, they split the assets.
Really?
Wife gets it and kids get it.
Okay, but he does have a will, and now he's just recently signed it all over to his wife, and the kids get nothing.
Right.
If he's competent, then that sticks.
If he's competent, you can disinherit anybody you want in Illinois except your spouse.
We're in our mid-70s, no kids. How do you pick someone as our conservator instead of a court-appointed person? Could a friend or a other family member be your conservator?
Let's the term conservator, Britney Spears made the term conservator famous. It's a guardianship case in Illinois, so the term is interchangeable. You want to avoid guardianship if you can. You want to pick an agent. John and I just talked about the power of attorneys. While you're competent, you want to name someone to manage your affairs when you're no longer competent.
And that doesn't have to be a family member, though.
Does not, and it avoids the courtroom.
Carrie, we're out of time.
Thank you, John. Always great.